This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Start your weekend off right. This is BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Canarim on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Oh, yeah. We've made it to week one of the college football season. Week zero, that was just a little appetizer, and here we are. Full slate of action that kicked off Thursday night, which we will get to in just a moment. Kayla Canarim, not with us for week one. This is her week zero, I guess. I'm Chris Mack. He's RJ Choppy. And we got a week zero that, you know, served as a little tasty appetizer, RJ. But now week one, a full slate of action. A lot of big spreads in some interesting games, which I know we'll get into. Some crazy action Thursday night, which I know we'll get into. But what's the view of the college football landscape where you are in the heart of Big 12 country?
Well, there's a lot of questions about what's going to happen to the heart of Big 12 country. That is one of the things that people are kind of talking about. But, you know, the other is, how does Oklahoma do without Lincoln Riley? How does Sark do in his second year at Texas? Does Coach McGuire improve things in Lubbock? Because, you know, that obviously is – it's not quite a sleeping giant, but it is a program that Mike Leach proved can do some great things. And then, of course, this is probably the most top-heavy I've probably ever seen this sport. Because you've got one team and then two teams and then a whole lot of question marks after that.
Yeah, and on a national landscape, it's really the big three that everybody kind of expects to be in the playoff at the end of the day. Bama, Georgia, and Ohio State. I've seen Clemson included in some of those. These guys are the field odds for the national championship. And we'll get into those during this hour as well here on BetQLU. The view from, I guess, what we would consider split Big Ten ACC territory is that one conference seemingly is becoming nationwide in the Big Ten, extending all the way to the West Coast. And then you've got the ACC trying to figure out where the heck they go from here. University of Pittsburgh, obviously an ACC school. We'll get to their Thursday night game in a minute. Penn State, a Big Ten school. We'll get to their Thursday night game in a minute. Both of them were really good. But the shifting landscape definitely has me wondering, RJ, as you mentioned, the Big 12. They're kind of in flux. They've reopened the media rights for negotiation to see what they can get out of it, including the four new members, but probably not accounting for Texas and Oklahoma, obviously, as their time is limited. The ACC would probably be served well to see if there's a way to rip up their deal. Meanwhile, the Big Ten is going to be everywhere starting next fall from noon until midnight, seemingly every single Saturday. And I'm curious what your view of it is, because to me, it looks like, again, the Big Ten is trying to become sort of a coast-to-coast, nationwide kind of product, while the SEC is trying to push back against that but still remain within – somewhat of the geographical boundaries that give the SEC its flavor, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, you know, and there are programs in the SEC that quite frankly don't have a similar culture to a majority of the SEC. Like Missouri just doesn't fit. You know, Missouri just doesn't fit like a, you know, culturally they're not the same. They're not on the, you know, they're not Alabama or Georgia or Ole Miss or Florida. Right. You know, like culturally, they're far different group. You know, we pride ourselves on being great at football. And I'm an SEC guy. I went to Tennessee. We pride ourselves on being great at football, or at least, you know, not my school, and then terrible at academics. Okay? So We're like, you know, these Big Ten schools that want to throw that, you know, accredited, you know, thing at you, these great academic universities, man, we don't care about that. We don't care about that stuff. You know, if you can get a C, D for degree, whatever, and you get through,
yep.
that's our culture. You know, our culture, our number one pastime in the South is drinking. It's our number one pastime. And the number two is drinking during college football games. And if that's you have to be a part of that culture to be a member of that conference. And I think they are going to stick to the South in the Southeastern Conference. Like, I don't see them going north of Charlottesville, you know, for example.
Yeah, C's get degrees. That's what I learned in my 4.5 years of state-sponsored drinking and partying at Penn State. So sure. I will say some Big Ten schools can hold their own. I had an interesting conversation with Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News the other day, who wrote a really good preview column of the Backyard Brawl game, which we'll break down in just a minute. Mm-hmm. But it was talking about how this entire thing could have changed based upon the last Backyard Brawl between Pitt and West Virginia, or one of the last ones, the 13-9 game in 2007. And 2 weeks later, after that upset, after Pat McAfee shanks a couple of field goals, Rich Rodriguez leaves for Michigan. And if that doesn't happen, if they win that game, if they go to a national championship game, if somehow they win it, maybe a few years later, when we talk about the dissolving of the Big East, maybe we're talking about WVU somehow sneaking into the SEC and Missouri, who you made a good point of not necessarily fitting into the culture. Maybe WVU becomes an SEC team, and maybe some of that conference realignment landscape that happened almost 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, changes, and we're looking at different conference realignment now. But as it stands, I think either way, we know it's all driven by the money. It's all driven by the TV deals. And it does feel like we're increasingly headed towards sort of those two mega powers and the other three conferences trying to fight for how they fit in with the two mega powers.
Look, I totally agree about West Virginia. Like, culturally, they're an SEC team. I went and toured that school, and there was a lot of similarities to the student bodies of West Virginia and about half the teams in the Southeastern Conference. The other three conferences seem to just kind of be in a holding pattern. I think the ACC is waiting for Clemson and Florida State to get plucked. I think the Big 12, the Pac-12 was waiting to see what the Big 12 media rights deal is going to happen with ESPN and Fox. And I think the Big 12 is kind of waiting, because the Big 12, the teams in the Big 12, they're really screwed. Yeah. They've had a chance to leave, and they all realized nobody wants them. You know, as much, you know, as good as Oklahoma State's been under Mike Gundy, they don't move the needle.
Right.
Texas Tech, you know, if you're the SEC, you've already got Texas and Texas A&M. You know, what do you really need Lubbock for? It really is a matter of who's going to take these. And I don't think anybody is. I think the Pac-12 and the Big 12's best option is to just join forces.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the remnants of the Pac-12, because we don't know how many more members of that conference might get picked off by the Big 10. Mm-hmm. We know they want to expand geographically. They've hit the West Coast. Do they want to create a West Coast division of sorts with Stanford and Cal and Washington and Oregon? That's certainly, I think, probably in the back of their minds. We'll see how it plays out. That's sort of a long-term 50,000-foot view of things that we will keep an eye on throughout the season here on BetQLU, where we will spend an hour every single Friday night and Saturday morning getting you ready for that week's action. In this case, since it's week one and we had a couple of big games on Thursday night, we've got those to break down as well. Let's kind of work our way backwards, RJ. Let's start with your alma mater, Tennessee. Huge win over Ball State. Tennessee, I think, one of the more underrated teams in the SEC. I'm curious to see. I've talked to one of my friends from there, Ramon Foster, who used to play for the Steelers. He's down there now in Nashville, and is really beating the drum for the Volunteers being a lot more competitive in the SEC this year than some people might give him credit for. That's the kind of game you want to put up in week one, beating Ball State by 7 touchdowns if you really are going to be competitive.
Yeah, and then you got Pitt next week on the road.
Right.
You know, they had a big win on Thursday night, but you know, they're also breaking in a new quarterback. So you know, typically that does lead to a slower start, even though they, you know, got the win and all. But man, I'll tell you, you know, the problem that they're going to run into, that Tennessee's going to run into, is they got to play Georgia and Alabama. And that's like, there's, you know, find a way for this team to not have two losses. I just don't know that you can do that. And if you can't do that, then you've got really no chance, unless they go to a 12-team playoff, you've really got no chance of making it anywhere. So yeah, it's a stepping stone, and that's a great one to have, you know, to be better this year than they were last year defensively. That's where it's going to really have to happen, because their offense seems to be okay. But I mean, what is the future outlook? It's they're going to lose to Alabama, they're going to lose to Georgia. And if they don't lose to both of them, you're stunned. You're stunned. Like, those would be stunning upsets.
Yes, absolutely. The Vols 40-1 right now to win the SEC. So long shots, definitely. But I know some people in Knoxville are feeling better about things, and certainly than they were a year ago at this time. You mentioned Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy. Backdoor cover from Central Michigan last night. The Cowboys were favored by 21.5. Central Michigan put a couple up late in the game to make it look better than it was, 58-44. I still question if the Cowboys don't drop a bit, despite, you know, you hate to drop in the polls despite a win, but you give up 44 to the Chippewas. I don't know how many people that's impressing.
Oh, no, it's not impressing anybody. They gave 424 passing yards. That's a lot of I know the Big 12 has defenses optional. That's a bit too much of an option right there. You cannot give up 44 points to Central Michigan. Not a home game. Can't do that. They probably will drop a tad. I'm with you. I hate to see a win and then drop, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm not in the business of style pointing wins,
right?
But I know that the committee is in the business of style pointing wins. I know the AP voters, which that poll doesn't matter. I know that they're in the business of style pointing wins. You know, like, you get a win, you move on. Every styles make fights, all that crap. But it's a bad look. It's a bad look to give up 44 points to Central Michigan. Really, especially in the first game of the season.
Oklahoma State going to host the Arizona State Sun Devils next week. All right, the two big ones on Thursday night. Let's start in West Lafayette, Indiana. Purdue hosting Penn State. Anybody who's watching this show can see the Nittany Lion on the front of my hat right now. Penn State covers the 3.5. The game hits the over, 52.5. But the Nittany Lions 14-1 to win the Big Ten behind Ohio State, Michigan in their own division in the East, and Wisconsin in the West. They're not competing. I'll just put it this way. They're not competing for the East Division, let alone the Big Ten Conference as a whole, with a sixth-year quarterback who's 24 years old and still making the kind of throws that led to a near back-breaking pick six that Sean Clifford made yesterday in the fourth quarter. He bounced back in that final drive just enough to float one into Kevon Lee for the go-ahead game-winning touchdown. But when you've got a hot-shot freshman like Drew Allaire behind you, you better play a stronger game as a sixth-year quarterback, RJ.
Yes, you must. And, you know, this is the interesting thing, and I think we're going to find this out. This will come to fruition as the year goes on. Typically, give me the guy with the higher upside at quarterback.
Right.
And if that is this hotshot freshman, then let him go. Like, you've got to ask yourself, like, what is the goal this year? Is the goal to win, what is it, the leaders or the legends division? I can never keep up with it. Is the goal to win that division of the Big Ten, or is it to win a national championship? If the goal is to win a national championship, who gives you a better chance of doing that? Like, do you want to roll out a poor man Stetson Bennett, or do you want to roll out a kid who's got a ton of upside? And I'm usually on the upside. Like, fail big or succeed big. That's kind of where I want to be. That's what I want.
Especially if you're James Franklin and you just signed a huge 10-year contract extension. You've got all the job security in the world. Right. Exactly.
If I had all that job security, man, I am throwing the – like, you want to win a title here, the freshman gives you the opportunity to win a title, it may not be this year. It may be next year. But getting him those valuable reps in there may help. But to me, give me the player at quarterback with the higher upside, not the safer pick. I don't want safe. I want to win big or I want to lose big.
Penn State, even with a win, 1-0 now, will get a chance to sort of soft reset at home against Ohio this coming weekend. If we had that kind of job security, we would just sit here for an hour and eat ribs and pound shiners and just occasionally talk about college football. We'd slack off, right? We'd be able to do whatever we want, RJ. Barbecue and beer.
I'm slacking off now, and I don't have that kind of job security. Imagine what I would do if I had money.
That's a good point. 10 years worth of money, too. 10-year contract.
10 years.
Yeah, so I want to get into Pitt, West Virginia in the backyard brawl, but I think it requires a little more time to dive into that conversation. So we will do that in just a moment. Plus, full slate of action this weekend, week one around the country, and some bigger spreads in games involving teams who you know. So what do we make of those bigger spreads? What spots do we like for maybe some possible upsets, some backdoor covers? Where do we suggest you lay your money? We'll get a little degen on it. I know RJ's got a big old slate ready to hand you some picks for this weekend's action. As BetQLU rolls on, we've got you covered every single weekend right here on the BetQL Network.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Canarum on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Kayla will jump into the mix next weekend. In the meantime, RJ Choppy and myself, Chris Mack, with you here on a solid hour of getting you ready for the action that is in front of you on week one of the college football season. Always the longest weekend of the college football season, that it usually extends all the way out through Monday night. And we will talk about that game on Monday night, Clemson, Georgia Tech, in just a few moments, as well as some of our other best bets and favorite plays for this weekend in just a couple of moments. But let's rewind to the beginning of the weekend, RJ, and let's start with the backyard brawl. West Virginia and Pitt, first time they had met in 11 years, a rivalry that's been contested well over 100 times, a rivalry that has some great moments in it, punctuated by the 2007 game in Morgantown, where Pitt beat West Virginia on a couple of missed field goals by Pat McAfee. It really is, again, I'm biased because I'm in Pittsburgh, even though I'm a Penn State guy, and I don't really have a dog in this fight. It is one of the great rivalries, and one of those rivalries that I saw a lot of people mention we really wish we could have on a yearly basis, regardless of conference affiliation. You know, you think of some of the other ones. Like the last time we saw Texas and Texas A&M, for example, down in your neck of the woods. And I grew up in Texas for a little bit, so I'm well aware. I had a second grade teacher that tried indoctrinating us into Giga Maggies and all that. So, you know, it's those rivalries that everyone loves, that when we do finally get them and we get a great game like we got Thursday night between Pitt and West Virginia, you really do get a chance to see what exactly it means for college football.
I 1,000% agree. Look, college football without rivalries, you know, and I think we're going to see this when, you know, we lose the conferences and it goes to basically two super conferences, and they try to turn this into a glorified version of the NFL or poor man's version of the NFL. College football without rivalries is just a lesser brand of football than the National Football League. That's all it is. It's you know, why is the XFL not going to succeed? Because it's bad quarterback play, right?
Right.
It's bad football. Well, if you make college football, this is my biggest complaint with it, with the expansion. If you try to make college football like the NFL, all you're going to get is bad NFL football. It's all you're going to get. You're going to get a lower quality version of the NFL. What makes it so great now is pageantry, rivalries, fan bases. Every game is a must win because there's no playoff. I mean, you're going to lose all that. And I think that you lose that with Pitt, West Virginia. You lose that with, you know, obviously, fortunately, Florida State still play. You know, but Florida Miami doesn't play every year. Florida State Miami doesn't play every year, or at least they didn't for a while. You know, West Virginia Pitt, Clemson, South Carolina, Texas, Texas A&M. You know, what's going to happen with USC, Stanford?
Right.
You know, so there's those. And then when Notre Dame goes to the Big Ten or whoever they go to, you know, what's going to happen to their game against Stanford? What's going to happen to their game against Michigan if they go to the ACC, for example? These are all questions, and I think this is going to be a problem for the sport because without the rivalries, without the intrigue of the fan bases, you know, all it is just a lesser quality football than the NFL. And to me, and I like college sports more than the NFL, but if all things are the same, I'm going to watch the better brand of football.
Yeah, you're right. It turns it into minor league football, like you said, the XFL or the USFL or whatever second-tier leagues have tried to get started in the last couple of years. As for the game itself on Thursday night, apart from the rivalry, what we did get were two very different head coaches, I thought. Pat Narduzzi, after the game, going after Scott Van Pelt and ESPN live on SportsCenter by saying, "I can't believe you guys put out a graphic that said our stadium would be 75% West Virginia fans." Now, granted, Morgantown and Pittsburgh are only 75 miles apart, but he didn't take kindly to that. He let ESPN know. And I thought it was a bit cringy, but at the same time, Pat Narduzzi's sticking up for his team and his fan base.
Yeah.
College football coaches are like politicians. They play to their base. And that's what Pat Narduzzi was doing on SportsCenter postgame last night. On the other hand, you have Mr. Milquetoast Neil Brown, who has never met a 6-6 standing he didn't and result he didn't like. Neil Brown would absolutely love to just kind of get by, I think, and not have anybody notice the fact that West Virginia is now underperforming to the standards that they did set 10 and 15 years ago under Rich Rodriguez and then later Dana Holgorsen, at least the start of his tenure. And it showed through in that opportunity just on the other side of the field, on Pitt's side of the field. They've got an opportunity, fourth and inches, quite literally inches, fourth and less than a foot, 6.5 minutes left. He's got an opportunity, if he gets the first down there, to run a few more minutes off the clock, kick a field goal, make it a two-score game, and put Pitt in a really tough situation. Instead, he, to paraphrase Mike Tomlin, lives in his fears and decides to punt on fourth and inches. Pitt ends up driving, scoring. Then you get the pick six back the other way on the next drive. And Mountaineer fans, the ones that were at least in attendance, and I'm sure the ones that were watching at home, go home crying in their beers because their head coach just, I don't know, he lost his guts. I can't think of a better way to put it. Yeah. He had an opportunity to put the game away and just didn't.
When you have a coach that refuses to, you know, play aggressive, so that you're going to get bit. The faster coaches look at punts as turnovers, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. The better off we're all going to be. You know, a punt and a turnover, what's the difference? 20 yards of field position in a passing world? I mean, that's nothing.
That's what, three one plays, play. Right? One series, yeah.
Maybe one play.
Yeah.
Maybe one play. So, like, do you really want to pass the ball back? You want to punt the ball back to them? Do you want to hand it over to them? No, I don't. I mean,
right.
The best way, you know, possession is the number one thing. Possession is more important than time on the clock. It's more important than anything. If you've got possession of the football, the other team, very difficult for them to score. The moment you give it back to them, you're playing a dangerous game, a very dangerous game. And like these conservative coaches, man, unless you got Nick Saban's defense and talent and stars on the other side of the field, you know, you better watch out.
And on a night when they were averaging, to that point, 6.5 yards a carry, West Virginia was. I mean, they were shoving it down Pitt's throat to not just simply line up and do it one more time, especially, I want to say, a series or two after their quarterback had simply snuck into the end zone for a touchdown. So Pitt outlasts West Virginia in the backyard brawl. West Virginia covers the 7.5, which is what it hit late. If you were lucky like this guy who has two thumbs and is pointing at himself right now and got it at 6.5 a week or two ago, then you got you got out of there alive. Over 50.5 hit as well. Pitt 8-1 to win the ACC behind Clemson, Miami, and NC State. Clemson and NC State in the Atlantic Division of the ACC. Miami and Pitt in the Coastal Division. Pitt and Miami meeting the final week of the regular season. Clemson and NC State meeting, I want to say it's week 7 of the regular season. Those may function sort of as two de facto semifinal games, if you believe the odds makers, for the ACC Conference Championship game, which Pitt will try to defend their crown if they can get there in early December. But when I look at this conference, RJ, I don't know what your feelings are on it. My number one, I don't know if you want to call it a hot take, if freezing cold takes, that Twitter account wants to save this off and throw it back at me in 4 months when I'm proven wrong. I am out on Clemson. And what I mean by that is, look, could they be good? Could they have a 10 or 11 win season? Certainly, I think they could. But for my money, DJ Uiagalelei is exactly what we saw last year, which is inconsistent and up and down. I realize he played through some injuries last year, and that may not be fair to him. But that's my assessment of it. And I think NC State is the team out of the Atlantic. I still do think, despite Thursday night's performance, Pitt is the team in the Coastal Division if Keaton Slovis can figure some things out at quarterback. He didn't really feel pressure well, didn't really climb the pocket well. But that could be week one rust. We'll see. I really like NC State in the ACC. And Clemson, I think I'm out on, which is why it kind of leads right into Monday night's game, the long weekend, week one finale, Clemson against Georgia Tech in Atlanta at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta. And Clemson laying anywhere between 22, 23 and a half, depending on where you find it. The total at 51. I have no problem. Georgia Tech win six games this year, maybe. Six, maybe seven. I have no problem, though, in that atmosphere, in that environment, given the fact that I think Clemson is entirely too overrated this year, taking Georgia Tech and more than three touchdowns.
Well, I mean, more than three is a lot. That's a lot. I have no problem taking that either. I'm with you on Clemson. I'm not a huge fan of DJ. I'll say this though. I mean, everything you read, that defense is going to be legit this year. You know, and you know we've seen this. You know, defense in the NFL is pretty unstable, but in college football, it's a talent-based business here as much as anything.
Right.
And they're going to have a talent advantage at every position on the field in just about every game they play, the exception of a couple of games, and maybe with the exception of quarterback at certain ones. I think we don't know what's going to happen with Hartman and how long he's going to be out at Wake. They're another team that, you know, if he's there, I like them. But the problem is we just don't know. We don't know when he's going to be when he's going to be ready to play. There's the ACC to me is wide open. Wide open. I could see Pitt. I could see NC State. I could see Wake Forest, depending on Hartman. And I could see Clemson. I could see Clemson winning that thing.
NC State, for what it's worth, 7-1 to win the ACC if you're looking for conference winners. And division winners, they are right behind Clemson to win that Atlantic division at 4-1, Clemson -220. I have one other game this weekend that I am really high on keeping an eye on, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I know you've got a full slate. I was looking at this earlier. Your D-Gen picks for this week, you've got – what would happen if I parlayed all eight of these? Have we figured out what the odds would be on that?
Ooh. I don't know the odds on that. I can find it right now. I can go to my account right now and see what we can do. So, you give me a minute or two. I can make that.
Yeah, happen. So here we go. I'll vamp for you and read off the plays that you listed earlier this morning while you look that up. We've got Middle Tennessee State getting 6. We've got Buffalo getting 24. Kent State, 23. Florida getting 3. Florida Moneyline at +125. Nevada Moneyline, -115. Oregon, Georgia under the 53 with that Bulldog defense. And Arkansas -6.5. Those are RJ's, that's RJ's slate of picks from earlier this morning that I saw you post on Twitter. If we punch all eight of those into the RJ Choppy parlay play machine, what kind of wild odds would we come up with?
Man, I'm still coming up with these in terms of, there's so many games. There's a million games here. To pick, so I'm almost done.
Okay.
But yeah,
can I tell you the one that jumps out to me, because it's the other game I was going to mention anyway, is Florida Utah, because in my opinion, this Florida Utah game, the entire college football season, and I mean the playoff, multiple conference championships, all hinge on the first domino that falls in that game. And what do I mean by that? If Utah can go to Gainesville and beat Florida, that puts Utah in the driver's seat for the Pac-12. Yeah. Yes, they will have to get past Southern Cal. I know. But they play each other and they've got an opportunity. They may have to beat USC twice. They may have to beat them once in the regular season and then again in the conference championship game. But beating Florida week one will instantly give them a leg up on Southern Cal if those two should end up in any sort of neutral situation, at least barring anything else crazy happening. And if Florida should beat Utah, it somewhat paves the way, I want to say, for Southern Cal, assuming they don't trip up twice against Utah. And it really inserts Florida heavy into the SEC East picture then, which, look, are they one of the elites in the SEC East? No, but certainly it feels like Florida is on their way back just a bit from where they were just a few years ago when they bottomed out under Dan Mullen. And so that, I think, is the most interesting game of the weekend, Florida-Utah, because that is the first domino that falls, and from there, everything else plays out.
It looks like, the seven-bet parlay, seven-bet,
yeah,
is plus 40,000.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm jumping $10 on the RJ Choppy parlay train. I'm hitting big, and I'm putting the kids in college with no worries. I love it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. He's RJ Choppy. I'm Chris Mack. We come back. We talk about some futures for this 2022 college football season. That on the way on BetQLU right here on the BetQL Network.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
To BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Canarum on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Yes, we are live coast to coast on the BetQL Network, wherever you may be in the world on your Odyssey app, AUDACY. That's how you get BetQLU every Friday night, Saturday morning. We spend an hour getting you ready for that weekend's action. It's week one of the college football season. We've touched a little bit on how the long week one weekend got started with the Thursday night game, some of which were crazy dramatic, instant classics in some cases. And we've touched just a bit on some games we've got an eye on for the rest of the weekend. We'll get into futures in just a moment. Teams we like for national championship odds, conference winners in just a moment. I am Chris Mack. Kayla Canarum will join us next weekend. I'm alongside RJ Choppy. And RJ, we've got a six-pack of games here that producer Zach laid out for us. You and I both intimately aware with how to work our way through a six-pack, I think. So yeah. Let's do that right now. And let's start with Oregon-Georgia. 17.5-point spread on this thing Saturday afternoon. Total is at 52.5. I think Oregon's going to be good this year. I don't think they're going to be, it's going to be one of the best Oregon teams of all time. I have no reason to bet against Georgia here. Even at 17.5, I'm not messing around with that. I know you mentioned earlier you like the under, and I think I'm going to ride with you on that.
Yeah, I like the under in this one. I don't know how much Oregon's going to be able to score on Georgia. I also don't know how much Georgia's going to score, period. I know they won the title last year, but you know their quarterback is not one of these guys that's going to go out to and win you a game. He's just going to be a very safe player. I think the under's the play. I don't have a great feel on the spread for this one, but I also think, you know, we look back to last year, Oregon pulled what I believe the upset of the year at Ohio State.
Right.
I don't think there's much. I don't know that I would come up with a secondary option of the upset of the year. I can't think of one. That said, you know, can they do that 2 years in a row? Travel across country again, you know, Atlanta, all that stuff. So I don't have a great feel on the spread, but I think this is a much more low-scoring game than we're going to give it credit for.
Yeah, and fascinating to see how Dan Lanning handles the return to the state of Georgia to face his former Bulldogs, who he was D coordinator for and won a national championship with. Cincinnati at Arkansas. This is a 6-point spread. I know you're on the Hogs here, right?
Yeah. New quarterback breaking in for Cincy. No more sauce. They got no more sauce there either. That was a great team they had last year. They're gonna, you know, they'll pick it up. They're gonna have a good team again. But you know, Sam Pittman has done a great job covering spreads at Arkansas. They're a team that is definitely on the rise. They're not, make no mistake about it, they're not going to compete for the SEC West. You know, they're undermanned, but they are a more talented team than Cincinnati. And I wonder, you know, how many Cincinnati players, you know, would start at Arkansas. You know, that's a question I got to ask myself, is how many of these guys would start. I think Arkansas wins by, you know, more than 6.5.
Utah, Florida, we've touched on already. I know you like the home dog, the Gators, getting points in Gainesville. We were talking during the break. I really like Utah this year. I talked earlier about how I think this is the first domino that kind of sets us off on the college football playoff path as well as the Pac-12 title path. I like Utah on the road. I think they're the team to beat in the Pac-12, in all honesty. Not that I don't believe that, again, Florida could be strong in the SEC East, but this is, if you can't get the Utes ready for this one, going on the road, Gainesville, week one, it's going to be an uphill battle the rest of the year. I think they come in prepared, focused, ready to go, and I think they do knock over that first domino of setting them down the path of a Pac-12 title with a win in Gainesville.
I think they definitely are the team to beat in the Pac-12. I'll say this: cross country flight, or you know, those games where you're way out of your element. You know, these college kids, these are 18, 19 year old kids, or sometimes making their first start on the road. And name me the Pac-12 stadium that they've played in that remotely resembles what they're about to deal with in Florida.
Yeah,
that is a difficult place. It's a tough place to be a fan of the other team there. I know that firsthand. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, imagine that is one of the crazy environments in the sport. Now maybe it's changed in the 20 years since I've been there, where it doesn't have that same. You know, I have a feeling that fans in general are just more preoccupied now during the games than they were. I don't think stadiums are necessarily as loud as they may have used to be, but that is a brutal place to play. And dude, is it going to be hot? It is going to be hot down there. And that's a lot to deal with in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, even with the 7 o'clock kickoff, you're right. That is a huge part of that game. Marcus Freeman and the Fighting Irish. Back to Columbus for Marcus Freeman in his head coaching debut. This one fascinating to me. I think Ohio State's going to be very good this year. I don't want to say they'll run away with the Big Ten East because Michigan's still there, and there's always a chance that Penn State will get their stuff together. 17, though, is a really big number against a Notre Dame defense that I really like. And to be quite honest, I don't know. I've got to see more from the quarterback position before I'm sold on the fact that this guy's the guy for Notre Dame.
I want to point this out.
Mm-hmm.
Las Vegas is telling you that the difference between number two and number five is, let's see, do I math here, 6 times greater than the difference between number seven and unranked.
Do the math.
So Utah is a 3-point favorite over unranked Florida. And number two is 17 over number five. So the difference between two and five is almost 6 times greater than the difference between seven and unranked. That tells you the have-nots of this sport.
You're absolutely right. So does it make sense? Would you lay the 17? Or is this a stay away for me?
Stay away. I'm staying away. Notre Dame is, I mean, they're talented, but we don't know. I know nothing about their coach. I know nothing about Fred. I have no idea what kind of coach he is. Apparently, everybody loves him. That's all I know. All I know is everybody loves this dude because when Brian Kelly left, Notre Dame was basically pressured by media fans, go hire this guy. Like, don't even really have a true search for the next coach. Just go hire him because everyone seems to love him. So, but I have no idea what kind of coach he is. Is he a good coach? Is he a moron? Is he an aggressive clock management? Is he a passive? Is he conservative? Does he go for it on fourth downs? I have no book on him. I do know Ohio State, and I do know they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and I do know their coach is, you know, a legitimate coach, and that they're a monster of a program.
Yeah, you make a good point about Freeman. I mean, he may be learning some of this stuff about himself on the fly, and he certainly is going to be learning about his quarterback, Tyler Buchner, on the fly as well. Florida State, LSU at the Superdome. This one, a 3-point game. Florida State, I just don't know what to make of them. They had a walkover in week zero against the Duquesne Dukes. And to be honest, they didn't, I think it was like a 39-point spread. They didn't cover it. I don't know, even getting three on the road. Look, I think Brian Kelly may end up being a miserable failure at LSU because I just don't think his personality jives with the SEC, but I don't think they fail to beat LSU by more than a field goal.
Yeah, I don't know that they do. I'm with you on Brian Kelly. There is no doubt that he is a fantastic coach. There's always been a fit issue when it comes to certain places. And LSU, I think, is that one place where you got to fit. You got to really fit to make it work. Nick Saban didn't fit, but he made it work somehow. I think we know that he's just different, right? I think we know that he is just different. Coach O definitely fit. He didn't make it work, though. He won a title. He won a title, but he didn't really make it work. LSU is a fickle spot. It's a fickle fan base. Do they take somebody, you know, a Yankee, an outsider coming down and you know, telling them how to run their operation? I don't know how they make it work, man. So I don't know what kind of a fit Brian Kelly's going to be there.
And then Clemson, Georgia Tech, we talked about earlier. I'm out on Clemson this year. That is a big spread for a rivalry game of sorts in the opener, Clemson, Georgia Tech, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. 22 is too much for me because I'm not convinced on Clemson. But Georgia Tech is not going to be very good this year. Like I said, maybe a 6-win team, maybe 7 if everything falls into place the right way for them. But I'd be willing to take the 22 and lean on Georgia Tech.
Yes, I would too. I don't think they win this game. I don't think Georgia Tech wins this game. But I'm going to absolutely lean on the Georgia Tech side. I don't know that Clemson can score enough. You know, their offense last year was abysmal at times. Now Georgia Tech's nothing special. They don't have the defense that Georgia has by any stretch. But we saw Clemson disappoint week after week after week last year. They still somehow won like 10 games. I don't know how they did it.
Right.
Yeah, they squeaked by in a lot of them, but I'm with you. I'll side with Georgia Tech in that spread.
All right, odds to win the national championship from BetMGM. Bama, the favorites, plus 190. Ohio State, 320. Georgia, the defending champs, 350. Then you drop down to Clemson at 12-1 and USC at 20-1. I don't know if I have a singular favorite. I like Ohio State. But the bet that I think I like the most, to be honest, I think this is going to be a crazy year. I do. I think we'll have at least one, if not two, maybe even three teams in the playoff that no one's thinking about right now. So I like one of those Bama, Georgia, Ohio State versus the field bets that you can get at like plus 270 for the national championship. Because I think we get something crazy different this year, RJ.
Okay, so you don't think either any of those three win the title?
No, I think we get something crazy off the board this year.
Wow, okay. Well, I mean, could have an A&M, could have Texas. I love USC at 20-1. You know, Lincoln Riley, I mean, you know, if he gets it going on with his offense, that's something that a lot of those teams aren't prepared for. They haven't seen it. That might be a decent bet at 20-1.
Keep it locked here all weekend, all your five-star bets at BetQL, and bring it back next weekend when we get you ready with another hour right here on the BetQL network of BetQLU.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL network presented by BetMGM.